is an all-ages and ability-inclusive event featuring nature sounds and field recordings in immersive surround sound from scientists and artists local and abroad from some of the world's most remote locations.
Listen to these places while sitting under the shifting stars from that time and place in nature's memory. Again, that's Here and There, audio postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue, Portland.
More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Palestinian Film Festival, October 5th to the 7th, at the Fifth Avenue Cinema in downtown Portland. From Friday evening to Sunday afternoon, the theater will feature films by and about Palestinians and the Israeli occupation.
The Stones Cry Out, a film about Palestinian Christians, will play on Friday, October 5th. Then, The Wanted 18, about the nonviolent struggle in Beit Sahur and the herd of 18 cows that Israel deemed a national security threat.
The Occupation of the American Mind, Steadfast Hope, and more.
You can find a link to tickets for the event on KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, next, One Land, Many Voices explores the ongoing cultural and political issues surrounding Israel and Palestine. At 10, Valley Views looks at open educational resources that allow Oregon students to significantly cut their expenses. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Pacific Underground tackles issues that affect the Asian and Pacific Islander communities of the Northwest. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. And now it's time for One Land, Many Voices.
I heard him say the revolution won't be televised. Al Jazeera proved him wrong. Twitter has him paralyzed. 80 million strong and ain't no longer gonna be terrorized. Organized, mobilized, vocalized. On the side of truth, the Madunya's living proof that it's a matter of time for the chickens home to roost. Bu Azizi lit the poof. And it slowly ignited the fire within every people to fight it. From Tunis to Khan Yunis, the new moon shines bright as the man's spoon was as mass as the man writes in the spell rumors of disunity, communally removing the tumors. Rotten Hakumas, we're making headway, chanting down the dictators, getting rid of dead weight, opening the floodgates like the streets of Jeddah. But whatever the thora maftuha, whatever unsidda. We've been empowered to speak, and though the future is uncertain, man, at least it isn't bleak. When our children can be raised not in a cage, but on a peak, the inheritors of Mother Earth are meek. Freedom isn't given by oppressors, it's demanded by oppressed. Freedom lovers, freedom fighters, free to gather and protest for the God-given rights, for a freedom of the press. We know freedom is the answer. The only question is, who's next?
Time to push, now we ain't falling back, no. Time to fight, cause we are all we have now. Do you hear me calling out for backups? Try to keep a lookout for better days.
Hello and good morning. My name is Layla Kanaan, and you're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Portland 90.7. On today's show, I will be interviewing Olivia Catby-Smith with my co-host, Muhammad Nabil, about the Portland Trail Blazers and their controversial sponsor. After, I'll discuss the Great March of Return that's taken place in Palestine over the past 6 months. Then, we will be talking with Reverend Dick Toll about the upcoming Palestinian Film Festival in Portland. And finally, I will attempt to localize the Palestinian cause by discussing the partnership between Black Lives Matter and Palestinians. We have Olivia Catby-Smith with us today, who's the co-chair of Portland's Democratic Socialists of America. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Olivia, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start talking about, like, how did you get involved in the Palestinian cause?
Sure. So my father's family is actually Syrian, but he was born and raised in Jordan, which, as you know, is a country with a population of over 70% Palestinians. And so I have cousins who are Palestinian, descendants of Palestinians. So it's always sort of like been on my radar. I was born here in Ohio, in a very sort of isolated community. So I was never really involved in activism until 2014 during the siege on Gaza. One of the first like real activist things I participated in was a huge march in Chicago. And we had probably like 20,000 people there. And that was really my first sort of foray into activism. And it's just something that I've tried to keep at the forefront of what we do now in Portland DSA.
Very cool. So we have an understanding and a little bit of background into the Blazers. Can you give us some information on the company that sponsors the Blazers, the Leopold and Stevens, and their relationship with the Trailblazers and the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force?
Sure. So Leopold and Stevens is a sniper scope manufacturer. They also manufacture other various like sort of sporting goods equipment like binoculars and that sort of thing. So they sponsor a segment during Trailblazers games called Hometown Hero, where someone, usually a veteran, sometimes a police officer, or they say first responder. I've never seen a first responder honored, but they honor someone during the game, and it's brought to you by Leupold, and Leupold is all over the arena at this time, and they get a free little goodie bag with binoculars with the Leupold sniper scope logo on it. It's very morbid. And this company gets a ton of positive advertising, and they have a contract with the Israeli Defense Forces for sniper scopes. And the IDF was photographed during the Great March of Return, where you can clearly see the Leupold logo. So this is the same logo that is all over Blazers games, at every Blazer game, that is used to murder Palestinians. And it's unacceptable for our hometown team to have that sort of partnership.
And many Palestinians have been killed. I mean, so many in the past few months. So it's pretty shocking news. I just found out about this, actually.
So I saw that you were a part of organizing a press conference at the Rib City 3-on-3 basketball tournament in August. Can you please tell us a bit about that event?
Sure. So the Rib City 3-on-3 is a tournament that the Trailblazers host every year where people can sign up as a team and play in this tournament. It's open to the whole community, kids and families. It's a very family-oriented event. So we went and we set up and had a sort of press conference just to educate the media and the public about this partnership, because people don't really know what it means. And we got a lot of positive coverage from that. There was a story on Think Progress. The Outline did a great story. It was in the Oregonian. Jerusalem Post ran a story. So it was really good to see that out there. And even like some basketball blogs, like Blazers Edge is one of the like best basketball blogs about the Trailblazers. And they ran it on their front page, and they had to shut down the comment section because it was so heated. It's really been good to see this issue get out there and have people educated on it, because the Trailblazers have a huge fan base. And so I think it's really important that we spread this message as much as we can.
Yeah, and use their influence to, you know, support this cause.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So today, the Blazers Media Day was at 10:30, right? And we understand that you were there. Can you tell us how you were involved and what you were involved with and what the results were?
Yeah, so we went... First of all, we are coming at this as Blazers fans and supporters. So, I mean, some of us are diehard, like, season ticket holders. You know, we've heard from box suite holders who are, like, supporting this cause now, which is really great. We don't want people to think that we're being, like, antagonistic to the Blazers. We love watching Blazers games. We want to go to Blazers games without seeing this horrific company having their propaganda everywhere. So... we have these banners that say Blazers, yes, war crimes, no, just to sort of express that, you know, we are Blazers fans. We're not a fan of war crimes. We're not a fan of violence that this company is enabling. So we hung up those banners. They're pretty big, so that people could see them when they were driving by, when they were going in for media day. And it clearly had an effect, because during the press conference, a reporter asked the Blazers president, Chris McGowan, about their controversial partnership with Leupold and Stevens. And he answered, like, you know, it's something we're monitoring, but we, unless something really drastic happens, like, we're not going to change anything. And we don't think anything drastic has happened.
Here's the clip of Blazers president Chris McGowan from the Trailblazers Media Day.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we're monitoring and watching. They're great partners of ours, and I try not to overreact until something tells me we need to. So we're going to just continue to monitor it. They're still going to be a partner of ours, and we're going to just carry forward with them. We support our partners just like they support us, unless something majorly drastic happens, and we feel like that hasn't really happened in this case.
So I think that's really, really telling of where their priorities lie right now, but it is encouraging that he was forced to answer that sort of question, and we hope that we can continue to keep the pressure on them. Absolutely. So that they eventually end the partnership.
Yeah, so speaking of that, some of our listeners may agree with an economic sanctions on a country that is engaged in a human rights abuse, but they may not agree with and would question a cultural and sports boycott. What would be your response to that?
Sure. So we're not asking anyone to boycott the Blazers, but, you know, say that the Blazers were playing an exhibition game against an Israeli team, which has happened before, we would be pressuring the Blazers to end that relationship and engage in the boycott movement. And that is because when cultural institutions like sports teams, like artists, play in Israel or play Israeli teams or artists or organizations or host them, it normalizes the horrific reality that is the current Israeli government. I mean, it whitewashes it as, you know, this is a normal country that we're going to have a normal exchange of ideas with, and that's not acceptable. I think we need to take a stand against the normalization of apartheid and continued brutalization and occupation of Palestine, and you see it with, like, the effect it had when Lana Del Rey canceled her show, 15 more artists dropped out. And that's amazing. And that's the kind of effect that we hope to have with these sort of cultural boycotts.
Absolutely. How could someone get involved if they're interested? How could they support the Palestinian cause?
So we have a bunch of different working groups and caucuses within DSA. And we're doing this sort of work through our caucus, which is the Imperialist Caucus. We do most of our Palestine solidarity work through that caucus, as well as some sort of like abolish ICE type of work, and hopefully a lot of other work as we get more people. So everyone is welcome to get involved that way. We're also encouraging people to contact the Blazers and ask them to end this partnership. And you can call their front desk at 503-234-9291.
Is there any last message would you like to tell our listeners about the Blazers and how this action would evolve in the future?
We do have things planned for the upcoming season that I don't necessarily want to mm-hmm. reveal right now. But I do think it's important to continue to spread the word, and not just about Palestine, but we see this with other sports teams as well, the continued sort of like increase in militaristic propaganda around sports. You know, the Defense Department pays millions and millions of dollars to professional sports teams to have these sort of patriotic displays that are really sort of brainwashing people into thinking that this level of militarism is acceptable and okay, and it's very dystopian. And I think the more that we call that out in all every context, the better.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us in the studio, Olivia.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much, Olivia.
That was Olivia Catby-Smith with Portland's Democratic Socialists of America talking with us about the Blazers and their sponsor, Leupold & Stevens, and her protests against the company. Just to reiterate, Leupold & Stevens provides the means for the Israeli army to use snipers as a way of countering peaceful protesters, historically, but most recently in the Great March of Return. Stay tuned to hear more about it. You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Portland 90.7. صباح الخير يا ولاد عمومنا تفضلوا شرفونا شو بتحب مضيفكم دم عربي ولا دموع من عيوننا بعدت اد هيك تأملوا نستقبل من هيك تعقدوا لما تدركموا على غلطة من هيك لبسنا الكوفي البيضة والسودة صاروا كلاب الزمان يلبسوها كموضة مهما تفننوا فيها مهما غيروا بلونة كوفية عربية بتضل عربية حطتنا ب
بدنا اياه ثقافتنا بدنا اياه كرامتنا بدنا اياه كل شيء لنا بدنا اياه ما رح نسكت لن نسمح لن ليك ليك لا بقلن يسرقوا شغلي مش الهن ما خصن فيه هلدونا بلتبس لبس هالقر يكفي هنش طمعانين عالقدس قدس اعرفوا كيف كونوا بشر
قبلنا بتلبسوا فيه
جينا نذكرن مين احنا وغصب عن ابوهم هي حطتنا
من هيك لبسنا الكوفيه.
Welcome back listeners. That was Kufiya Arabiya by Shadia Mansour. My name is Leila Kanan, and you're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Portland. On this segment, I decided to talk about something majorly drastic that's been happening in Palestine over the past 6 months. On March 30th, protests started in the Gaza Strip near the border with Israel, called the Great March of Return, in Arabic, Musriyat al-Oud al-Kubra. The protests are meant to highlight the right that Palestinian refugees and their descendants have to return to the land that they were displaced from in 1948 and what is now Israel. They are also protesting the relocation of the United States Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. But to understand this conflict fully, you have to realize the complete situation in Gaza. Currently, Israel has control over Gaza's air and sea space, and 6 of Gaza's 7 land crossings. Gaza still remains dependent on Israel for its water, its electricity, and its telecommunications. In January of this year, it was reported that 97% of tap water in Gaza is undrinkable because of the sewage pollution. This means that Gazans have to purchase water from local desalination facilities at really high, unaffordable prices. They are also reliant on Israel for electricity, but are usually unable to pay Israel for the electricity, which results in Gazans only having access to 4 hours of electricity a day, which of course impairs the function of health services and other crucial social services that run societies. The unemployment rate in Gaza has risen to 44%. Nearly 40% of children living in Gaza are reported to be malnourished and suffering from anemia. Of course, I could keep listing statistics, but you understand the sheer desperation Palestinians living in Gaza are experiencing. Although the primary reason for the protests is the right of return, with these compounded issues that Gazans face, they are also fighting for basic human rights that they have been so severely deprived of. On the first day of protests, on March 30th, Palestinians began throwing rocks, and lit tires, and homemade Molotov cocktails towards the border, and Israel responded by declaring the Gaza border zone a closed military zone, which essentially gave them the freedom to open fire on the protesters. To clarify, although Molotov cocktails may seem threatening, they absolutely do not compare to the weapons that Israeli soldiers have used against the protesters. A spokesman for the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights told reporters that, quote, "an attempt to approach or cross or damage the fence does not amount to a threat to life or serious injury and are not sufficient grounds for the use of live ammunition." This is also the case with regards to stones and Molotov cocktails being thrown from a distance at well-protected security forces located behind defensive positions, unquote. Meanwhile, the U.S. claims that Israel has a right to defend its borders. I mean, these protests have been noted as being peaceful demonstrations, a shift towards nonviolent forms of protest. Again, Palestinians protesting usually have nothing more than rocks and tires to protect themselves from the wall of armed IDF soldiers that are more than willing to retaliate violently. Many times, Israel has been accused of shooting and killing innocent protesters. For example, at a protest, a 19-year-old Palestinian was seen in video footage being shot in the back while holding a tire and running away from the fence. The IDF said he was a member of Hamas, but both Hamas and his parents denied this allegation. The IDF then said that the film was edited and fabricated. Another 20-year-old man was shot in the head while smoking a cigarette behind a group of Palestinians throwing stones. Stories like this, the complete denial and lack of accountability from Israel, are not uncommon, unfortunately. There have also been many stories of journalists and medical workers being shot and killed by Israeli snipers. On April 6th, Yasser Murtaha, a 30-year-old Palestinian photographer, was shot in the stomach by an Israeli sniper despite wearing a jacket that clearly marked press. On the same day, 7 other Palestinian journalists were injured by the IDF. Although many of the protesters involved in this are young men, on April 20th, there was a protest dedicated to the Women's March of Gaza to highlight the role women have played in these protests. 4 Palestinian protesters were killed, one of them being a 14-year-old boy who was running away from tear gas when he was shot in the head. Jumping forward, the protests on May 14th were meant to coincide with the ceremony marking the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Both events were timed to mark the 70 years since the creation of the State of Israel.
One side was in celebration and one side was in mourning. This day marked the peak of the protests and the first time since the start of the protests that an Israeli soldier was slightly injured. While on the same day, 60 Palestinians were shot dead and more than 1,200 were injured, making it the bloodiest day since the 2014 war in Gaza. During this time, Israel has received criticisms from countries like Russia, France, Germany, the UK, Ireland, and Belgium. South Africa withdrew its ambassador to Israel, explaining their reason as being the indiscriminate and grave manner at the latest Israeli attack. Similarly, Turkey's president stated that Turkey would recall its ambassadors from Israel and the U.S. because Israel's actions against Palestinian protesters are acts of genocide. On July 16th, Israel announced that due to increased violence, they would temporarily suspend deliveries of gas and petrol into Gaza and limit offshore fishing to half the previous maritime limit. This gives Palestinian fishermen 3 nautical miles to fish, and if they don't stay within this boundary, Gazan fishermen risk being fired upon by Israeli patrol boats, which can cause severe damage to the boats or can injure and kill the fishermen. I couldn't find a current number of casualties and injuries since the start of the protest in March, but as of August, 155 Palestinians have been killed and more than 17,000 Palestinians have been wounded. 17,000. That's a number that we cannot comprehend. More than 4,000 of them were struck by 3 to 5 live bullets. Israel has been condemned countless times from the United Nations General Assembly, Human Rights Watch, Beit Salim, and Amnesty International. Kuwait has also proposed 2 UN Council statements that called for an investigation into Israel's killing of protesters, both of which have been rejected by the U.S. Palestinian protests against the actions of the Israeli government are ongoing and are gaining worldwide attention. Why it's taken 70 years for Palestinian voices to be heard? I don't know. But the important thing is that the Palestinian question is finally starting to be answered. Up next on One Land, Many Voices, we'll be talking to Reverend Dick Toll about the upcoming Palestinian Film Festival. Stay tuned.
Some of y'all think it's a trend, a fashion statement. Disgustingly, I spit on the pavement. It's basic. Y'all know I bang for my flag. My bandana ain't no rag. The kafia ain't no scarf. It's a part of the movement. The symbolism is resistance. No coincidence that you can see the RBG in it. Cable neat the bandera. Ain't it beautiful? I say it in Spanish. It's solidarity. The feelings is mutual. Meanwhile, hi, that's M1 in Arabic. I'm pro-Falastini, does that make me a terrorist? You can catch me in Gaza, in Haifa or Ramallah, but I'm still just Mutulu Olubala. So when I rep with Shaja, we rhyme with our middle fingers up to the Zionists, cause we don't give a it's justice. So tie that thing around your head and ride. Wave it in the air and let me know what side you on. Uhuru, yeah. The kafir is Arab. Yeah, it's M1. Solidarity, feel me, Shaja. Dude, from the ghetto to Gaza.
Before we start our interview with Reverend Dick Toll, I thought I would provide a little bit more background about the films they'll be showing at the Palestinian Film Festival. On October 5th through the 7th, Friends of Sabeel North America and the Spirit of Grace are hosting this film festival, which focuses on Palestinian human rights in the Holy Land. On the first night of the film festival at 7 p.m. on October 5th, the film The Stones Cry Out will be showing. For 70 years, the Palestinians, Christians and Muslims alike, have suffered displacement, expulsion, wars, occupation, and oppression. The voices of Palestinian Christians have too often been drowned out in the turmoil of events. This is their story in their voices from the Nakba of 1948 until today. Here is the trailer.
The Palestinian Christian community is a very special community. This is where it's all started.
Christians have lived continuously throughout the Middle East since the day of Pentecost, more than 2,000 years ago. They are the descendants of those early followers of Christ, yet few are even aware of their existence.
It's very important that all the Christian locations do not just become archaeological sites or museums. The living aspect of Christianity in Palestine is disappearing.
They were always crying and asking God, what have we done?
there can be no excuse for the illegal and arbitrary confiscation of furniture and household belongings.
While I was growing up, I thought it was the problem of the previous generation. After 67, I felt now it's become my issue.
They have their aims. Now it is very clear, very evident. They want all the land.
Don't come just to run where Jesus walked, but come to meet the living stones.
On the second night of the film festival at 7 p.m. on October 6th, the film The Wanted 18 will be playing. It follows the story of Palestinians living in Beit Sahur who start a local dairy farm and are hiding a herd of 18 cows from Israeli security forces when the dairy collective was deemed a threat to Israeli national security. The film includes a combination of animation and documentary footage. Here is a clip from the film.
Early 1988, a Beit Sahur cow truck drove to an Israeli kibbutz. An Israeli peacenik there agreed to sell my town the cows. There was Rivka, Ruth, Lola, and then there was Goldie.
We are Palestinians. We deserve to have a home. We deserve to have our land. We deserve to have our freedom. And we deserve to have cows.
For me, as a teenager at that time, it was about the fun and about, you know, proving that we can stop Israeli cars and vans and products coming into our city.
The military governor came one day with his soldiers. He said, and I quote the exact words, "These cows are dangerous for the security of the state of Israel." I can't understand how can 18 cows be dangerous for the security of the state of Israel.
We were kings. We were mastering our own destiny, actually. We had a full life. Complete, I would say.
The final day of the film festival, on October 7th, the film The Occupation of the American Mind will be showing at 3 p.m. This featured film is about Israel's ongoing military occupation of Palestinian territories and repeated invasions of the Gaza Strip, which have triggered a fierce backlash against Israeli policies virtually everywhere in the world except for the U.S. The Occupation of the American Mind takes an eye-opening look at this critical exception, zeroing in on pro-Israeli public relation efforts. Here is the trailer.
And I think Americans largely get it. They know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
This strip of land is being bombarded from the air, sea, and land.
Israel launched at least 160 strikes on the Gaza Strip.
And there's one less hospital in Gaza now.
This, the latest CNN ORC poll of Americans, shows 57% of those polls say Israel's action in Gaza is justified, 34% say unjustified.
A man's got to do what a man's got to do, and you'd say a country's got to do what a country's got to do. We have to defend ourselves.
It's very difficult to divorce public opinion on any question from the media coverage that people rely on to form opinions. And I think the most prevalent lesson from looking at the coverage is that the coverage tends to see this conflict from the Israeli side.
Israel is a state that implements its right to defend itself and its citizens.
We hear over and over again that the conflict comes down to Palestinian terrorism and Israeli security.
If rockets fly on your head, you're allowed to defend yourself.
And what gets pushed out of the frame entirely is the fact now that for almost 50 years, Palestinians have been systematically dispossessed from their land and denied their most basic human rights.
They have been able to effectively defend the indefensible to the American public through
miseducation and misinformation campaigns through effective talking points.
What would you do? More than 3,000 rockets have been fired on your cities.
Any advertising executive will tell you the essence of propaganda is repetition.
Israel has a right to defend itself against rocket and tunnel attacks from Hamas.
Israel is under siege by a terrorist organization.
The American political class has basically swallowed the line, hook, line, and sinker.
This administration will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself.
The other area where this is largely true, I would say, is the media.
Why is Hamas launching missiles into population centers of Israel?
Our national media is a scandal when it comes to Israel.
They're always preparing Americans for an attack against these people who are incorrigible terrorists and never, ever giving the other side of the story.
Well, Hamas rockets rain down on Israeli border towns.
Israel's mechanism of projecting its propaganda, or what they call hasbara, is a weapon of Israeli warfare.
We have with us Reverend Dektol with Friends of Sabil North America and Spirit of Grace here with us to talk about the Palestinian Film Festival in Portland. So let's start by having you tell us a little bit about the film festival. Can you give us an overview of what to expect from October 5th to the 7th?
Yes, I would appreciate that very much. I'm so glad to be with you on KBU. Thank you for inviting me. The 5th is a Friday night, and we'll have four films. The Spirit of Grace, the people there have been wonderful in planning this event primarily, and Francis Sabil is working with them and choosing the films and doing what we feel is important. The first one on Friday night at 7 o'clock is The Stones Cry Out. And this is an attempt to really understand the Palestinian Christian story, because it goes back to what happened in 1948. The people that are being interviewed, the people that are part of the film, are all Christians that relate to the churches there, that belong to the churches and worship there. There's 11 indigenous churches within the area in the Holy Land, and they're primarily Orthodox and Catholic. Anglican and Lutheran are the only two that have a Protestant background, but they speak out in ways of what happened to them and what's happening to them. And I find that most Americans don't understand the Christian community there and need to be a part of understanding, because we have failed them, and they know it. They feel abandoned by the American church especially. So I would hope that people would come for that. The Wanted 18 is, again, a film that is based in Beit Sahur primarily, near Bethlehem, and it's humorous at some points and tragic. It's very revealing as the resistance that the Palestinians faced 30 years ago is still happening, and they're trying to make a point in this film of what happened on the fact that they wanted to feed their children with milk that was coming out of the community. And apparently the Israeli Defense Force didn't want that to happen, because they wanted them to buy milk from Israel. So they are hunting down, the Wanted 18 is the name of the film, these cows that are moved around in all kinds of ways to sort of make the point that the resistance is there, and they want to feed their children with milk from their cows. And at the same time, there's a strike going on in the town and resistance, and it's really pointing towards a resistance that has happened all these years in its own way, nonviolently. And we often find that this is not listened to or heard in our American community. So I hope that people go to that one with some background material on what it means to resist. And then the film that night is at 7 o'clock, called Imprisoning a Generation. People here in America do not realize what the occupation is doing to the people that live there in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem. But it's horrendous, especially for the children there. And this is a new film. It's not been shown anywhere, and it's done by a local Portland resident by the name of Zelda Edmonds. And so we're going to be showing that film. One of the highlights of the film is the four or five children that are being interviewed, 12, 13, 14-year-old children, as to what happened to them when they were arrested, whether they were guilty or not, of how long they had to stay in prison, how they were arrested, how their parents weren't able to be a part of things. And it's really revealing because the children are very articulate and trying to speak to an issue that, again, we don't know much about. And over 700 children were arrested last year in the West Bank and in the villages. And it's horrendous to hear the story of when they're arrested and how they're arrested and the homes that are violated as the Israeli Defense Force moves into these villages and towns. And in one of the pictures in this show that we're going to be doing, it shows 50 soldiers arresting one person, and it's at 2 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, it's overkill, so to speak, taking this young person to jail. And so that's going to be an important thing because these people live under military occupation, and they don't go through any courts but military courts, which means that they don't have lawyers, they don't have the rights that we think they should have. It's a human rights violation. The occupation is a human rights violation, but this especially needs to be addressed. And then on Sunday afternoon, the fourth one will be at 3 o'clock, and that's called The Occupation of the American Mind, and it really, really, really zeroes in on the fact that we are hearing a story from only one point of view. We do not hear what's happening to the Palestinians in our news and our TV stuff. We are really ignorant of what's going on, and we need to address it as a people. So this is a very good film with some very good highlights of the last few years on especially that subject, and comparing it at times to what's happening in other parts of the world on the same issues, where they are addressed, but in America, they are not. So I hope that The Occupation of the American Mind will be one that you will consider coming to also.
Thank you very much. I hope you didn't spoil the movies, actually, but but on this note, can you please tell us why the Friends of Samil and Spirit of Grace are hosting the Palestine Film Festival? And are there any other organizations involved?
Yes. Well, for a number of years, we've worked together in various churches trying to do education, try to find a way into the larger community, and especially the church community. The church community is really not done well on this issue. And we are trying to inform our churches, and we're trying to inform each other and have a conversation. And so that's the background of how we've been developing over a number of years, really, conferences and all. And there are co-sponsors that are being a part of this. Friends of Sabil, of Spirit of Grace, of course, are the two people that I was highlighting. Oregon Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church is very much a part of this, as is also the Task Force for Palestinian Human Rights of the Episcopal Church in Oregon. Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights, super. Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, offer. Lutherans for Justice in the Holy Land at Central Lutheran, Kairos USA, Jewish Voice for Peace, Portland Chapter, United Methodist Conference, Holy Land Task Force of Oregon, Idaho, United Church of Christ, Palestine Israel Network, Central Pacific Conference. There are others, but that's a good smattering of lots of people that we hope will be there for this.
And for follow-up for our audience, we will be able to put the full list of co-sponsors on our episode online on kbo.fm.
It's pretty inspirational to know how many people are involved in this. Really uplifting.
Yes, well, I hope that it's a place that people will... I'm signed up for all four, and I hope others will find that also.
Very good. So I guess on a more personal level, why did you get involved in this event? And what inspired you to help the Palestinian cause?
Oh, goodness. When I went to seminary 50 years ago, longer than that, in Berkeley, California, I had never even really realized that Palestinians were in the mix. And one of my friends at seminary, who we graduated from seminary, and he went to Jerusalem. He was a Palestinian. And I was on the phone with him last week. He's getting an honorary doctorate at Virginia Seminary next week. But we've worked together for a number, well, all these years. My first visit in 83 was to visit him, and he kept saying, come and see. And I finally did, and took a group with me from the cathedral in Seattle, Washington. And I've gone almost every year since then, and sometimes twice. taking groups and going to conferences that we sponsor over there. We have international conferences with Sabil Jerusalem.
So you mainly go to Jerusalem to visit?
Yes, and spend time in various places. I've been to Gaza 4 times and have been in the Galilee region quite a bit. And Sabil has an office there in Jerusalem. So I've got a lot of friends there that I like to go and see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now you have a personal tie to Palestine.
Very personal tie. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I was there in March, and I've tried to go every year since 1983 on different study groups and international conferences and Sabil witness trips. And I'll have to say my ignorance is still being repaired because we as Americans really do not know what's happened or is happening.
Yeah, we don't know the full picture.
No, we don't.
In the slightest.
And
yeah.
I try to come back and help the process of learning education. And that's why I'm interested in this film series, because it's got some wonderful insights as to what happened and what's happening. And to know the resistance in its pure form of non-resistance and people who care for each other, I can't tell you what it's meant to me over the years. I've found in my own learning experience that it has meant a lot to me to be exposed to the Christians there, because I've learned a lot about what it means to be a Christian because of who those people are. And of course, we work with all the Muslims and Jewish people that are in the camp of, you know, human rights. So we are working with all those groups.
That's very nice.
Thank you very much. On a bit larger scale, why do you think it's important for Oregonians to have an understanding of the Palestinian question? What do you think they should take away from this Palestinian festival?
Well, I would hope they would start answering questions that they're not asking now, because people go along as though they know a lot about what's going on, and they don't. So I'd like for them to start asking questions that they haven't and would be willing to talk about it and find a way through it. Basically, we're paying for the occupation. We as Americans just passed a bill last week, I think $3 billion a year, which adds up to $10 million a day, that Oregonians, if they had, you know, some of their money that's going over there, might could do something more with their schools or other things that are important to Oregonians and anyone in the United States. I have watched the development of this issue in such a way and watched the money being spent poured down in from our tax dollar going into the wall and settlement roads. That's my money, and that's your money. So I resent that personally. Like, if we sort of took our money away, there might be a way of solving the problem there. They might figure out a way to solve their own problems rather than to have it us giving money so that they can do what they want to with it.
Thank you for that. So to wrap up, would you recommend any films in particular to someone who is unfamiliar with the conflict if they can't go all 3 nights?
The last film on the occupation of the American mind is very real. And you've got all the interviews going on with some very, very good people.
Great. Well, thank you, Reverend Toll, for joining us in the studio.
Thank you very much.
That was Reverend Dick Toll with Friends of Sabil North America and the Spirit of Grace, talking with us about the upcoming Palestinian Film Festival in Portland, happening on October 5th through the 7th. For more information about the festival, go to the KBOO website at kboo.fm on the right-hand side under Community Events. You're listening to One Land, Many Voices on KBOO Portland 90.7. We'll be right back after this short break.
Slaves to the pains of each other. One thing I believe I could learn, to see my enemy as my brother. Then we could be free, truly. And love could wash away all the sorrows. I'm not afraid to bleed if it means we'll make a better today, not tomorrow.
The topic of Palestine can oftentimes feel daunting and overwhelming and difficult to understand. In the U.S., we're exposed to media that usually reports only one side of the story, much of it being Israeli propaganda. Of course, it is a very difficult situation to understand, so as a way to make this conflict a bit more relatable, I decided to talk about the striking parallels between black lives in the States and Palestinian lives in Palestine and Israel. To get us started, I wanted to play a clip of Angela Davis speaking about Palestine.
So now we're confronted with the task of assisting our sisters and brothers in Palestine as they battle against Israeli apartheid. Their struggles have many similarities with those against South African apartheid, one of the most salient being the ideological condemnation of their freedom efforts under the rubric of terrorism. And I understand that evidence is being made available that indicates historical collaboration between the CIA. Well, we knew the CIA collaborated with the South African apartheid regime, but it appears that it was a CIA agent who gave South African authorities the location of Nelson Mandela's whereabouts in 1962, and that led, of course, directly to his capture and imprisonment. And it wasn't until the year 2008, that's like 5 years ago, right? That his name was taken off of the terrorist watch list when George W. Bush, maybe you remember him, when George W. Bush signed a bill that finally removed him and other members of the ANC from the list. In other words, when Mandela visited the U.S. on several occasions after his release in 1990, he was still on the terrorist list, and there had to be the requirement that he be banned from the U.S. had to be expressly waived. The point that I'm making is that for a very long time, he and his comrades shared the same status as numerous Palestinians today. And that as the U.S. explicitly collaborated with the South African apartheid government, it supported and continues to support the Israeli occupation of Palestine, currently in the form of over $8.5 million a day in military aid. The occupation would not be possible without the collaboration of the U.S. government.
The alliance between the Movement for Black Lives and Palestinians began during the Ferguson protests in 2014, which started after the murder of Michael Brown at the hands of Officer Darren Wilson. At the same time, Palestinians in Gaza were suffering from Israeli bombings, which led to the utter destruction of Gaza, an already deteriorated city. While the Ferguson protesters were under attack by the police, Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza reached out to the protesters, giving them advice on how to deal with police violence and tear gas. Palestinian activist Maryam Barghouti tweeted, "Always make sure to run against the wind, to keep calm when you're tear gassed. The pain will pass. Don't rub your eyes. Hashtag Ferguson Solidarity." She explained that the connection between Palestinians and Black Americans is crucial for human rights and that, quote, "it reminds us that oppression has no boundaries. Despite the differences, our struggles are united. No justice is true justice without liberation for all," unquote. Soon after, the Movement for Black Lives, a coalition of over 60 organizations affiliated with the Black Lives Matter movement, created a document called Invest Divest, which urges the U.S. to redirect military aid to Israel, which is currently at an all-time high of $10 million a day, into domestic social services and needs, like education and healthcare. The document states, quote, "The U.S. justifies and advances the global war on terror via its alliance with Israel and is complicit in the genocide taking place against the Palestinian people," unquote. With this alliance forming and becoming stronger over the years, many Jewish supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement express feeling alienated and excluded. This new partnership has enraged Zionists. They deem it controversial as a way to discredit the project. Of course, there is nothing controversial about calling out a settler colonialist government for the racist apartheid country that it is. There is nothing controversial about partnering with the global BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, one of the most successful peaceful protests against Israel. And of course, there is nothing controversial about shedding light on the systematic killings and incarcerations of Palestinians. This is a very similar response to a pro-BDS resolution that was passed at the University of Oregon that I took part in with the group SUPER, Students United for Palestinian Equal Rights. The achieved goal of this was to have the university divest from Israeli companies like Caterpillar, HP, Sabra Hummus, and others. After this bill was presented, the Jewish community on campus explained that they felt this bill was divisive and harmful for students on campus. Even University of Oregon's president, Michael Schill, made a statement on the passage of the resolution saying, quote, "It is important that all of us make every effort we can to avoid dividing our community along the lines of ideology, religion, or national origin." To many Jewish people, myself included, the BDS movement not only seeks to criticize the policies of the current Israeli government, but also calls into question the very right of the State of Israel to exist, unquote. What President Schill and other Jewish groups on campus said, Hillel, for example, the largest Jewish campus organization, is simply untrue. One of the groups sponsoring this resolution, and one we worked very close with, is the group Decolonizing Judaism. By deeming this resolution as exclusionary, Schill and others are completely erasing their voices. The same sentiment can be seen with the Black Lives Matter movement supporting Palestinian human rights. As I said before, Jewish activists that previously supported the Black Lives Matter movement find that their support for the BDS movement and the Palestinian cause has led to a divide in the country. However, groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, If Not Now, and other individual Jewish people are still dedicated supporters of both BDS and Black Lives Matter. However, once again, their voices have been silenced because of the mainstream view that supporting Palestine is a threat to Jewish existence. Furthermore, the BDS movement has been deemed as anti-Semitic. But how can that be if the movement is targeting a government and not a religion? The violence that the government uses has nothing to do with Judaism. It has to do with maintaining their political power at the expense of human lives. The BDS movement and the Black Lives Matter movement are protesting an apartheid state that commits inhumane acts and systematic oppression. A report written by Richard Falk, former UN Special Rapporteur to the Palestinian Territories, and Virginia Tilley, a professor of political science, divided Palestinians into four distinct groups, all treated differently by Israelis, but they all face the racial oppression that results from the apartheid regime. These groups include the 1.7 million Palestinians who are full citizens of Israel, the 300,000 Palestinians living in East Jerusalem, the 4.6 million Palestinians who live in the West Bank and Gaza, and the last group, which includes the 6 million Palestinians living outside of Israel and Palestine. Each one of these groups is subject to their own special form of discrimination, whether it be living under military rule, not having basic access to education, healthcare, employment, or being unable to return to their homes that they were forcibly kicked out of 70 years ago. These issues that Palestinians face abroad are the same issues that Black Americans face here. In Palestine, we see demolitions in the West Bank to make room for illegal settlements. In America, we see gentrification displacing Black communities. In Palestine, we see the apartheid wall literally dividing communities. Vic Mensa, an artist that opened my eyes to the parallels between the two movements, made the comparison of the wall in Palestine to Chicago when he said, quote, "It's as if the south side of Chicago's most forgotten and disenfranchised neighborhoods were separated from the luxury of downtown's Gold Coast by a simple concrete wall." The Israeli government is the same imperialist and patriarchal government we are fighting against here. I'm going to play a clip from an interview on Democracy Now! With NFL player Michael Bennett, as he once again highlights the similarities between the two groups and explains his reasoning for refusing to take a trip to Israel.
Earlier this month, professional football star Michael Bennett made headlines when he pulled out an Israeli government-sponsored trip to Israel for NFL players. In an open letter, Bennett, who plays for the Seattle Seahawks, wrote, "One of my heroes has always been Muhammad Ali. I know that Ali always stood strongly with the Palestinian people, visiting refugee camps, going to rallies, always willing to be a voice for the voiceless. I want to be a voice for the voiceless, and I cannot do that by going on this kind of trip to Israel." Bennett's words struck a chord with his teammates. In the end, only 5 out of the original 13 players ended up traveling as ambassadors of goodwill for Israel. Well, yesterday I spoke with Michael Bennett and Dave Zirin, a sports editor for The Nation magazine. I began by asking Michael Bennett about his decision not to go to Israel.
I decided not to go because, you know, doing some my research on Palestine and Israel and all the things that were going on, I seen so many similarities between, you know, the Black Lives Movement and the Palestinian movement. And, you know, I figured if I was going to go to Israel, you know, I should be able to go see both sides. And, you know, I didn't want to be an ambassador for a certain government if I wasn't sure if I agree with everything the government was doing. So I thought it would be better to go in my own time and you know, and figure out, you know, my own situation when I get there.
How did this trip end up getting planned?
You know, they contacted us during the last year in the summertime, and, you know, they were talking about this trip, and I thought it was just more of like a trip that you get to go see Israel. I didn't know it was like an ambassador trip and all the extra stuff. So, you know, once I found out about that, you know, some of my friends called me and was like, oh, did you know this and did you know that? And when they called me, I just decided to, you know, I was like, oh, well, I can't do this. I don't want to be an ambassador for something that I don't agree with.
Michael, what kind of response did you get to posting that letter?
I think I got, I mean, it was very, I felt like there were some people that thought I was anti-Semitic, and so they were, like, getting mad, and I was like, no, I'm not against any Jewish people or any, I'm not against anybody when it comes to people, but you know, they seemed, they thought I was anti-Semitic, but I wasn't. You know, I was just saying that when I do go to Israel, I would love to see Palestine, too. And, you know, I got a lot of great things. I think a lot of people tweeted, emailed, all kinds of things, and said they were proud, you know, that an athlete, you know, stood for something that was going on in the world. And I think when the things that are going on in America at the same time and things that are going around the whole world in Palestine, all across, and, you know, I just wanted to be, you know, and if I do be an ambassador, it would be for a goodwill of the world, the things that are going on around the world, and they're so similar to the things that are going on in America, whether we're talking about Ferguson or we're talking about, you know, Baltimore or Eric Garner, just, you know, there's a lot of things that are going on here that are similar to things that are going on in Palestine. And once I did so much research and started reading and seeing the similarities, I knew that I couldn't go on this trip.
It's important for people who have influence over Americans, especially well-known sports players, to use their platforms and their voices to bring justice to those who have faced discrimination, whether that be Black people in America or Palestinians. Rachel Gilmer, a Black Jewish activist, said something that really stuck with me. She said, quote, "I started thinking more about how important it is for us to stand in solidarity with Palestinian people. We are never going to get free in the U.S. if the rest of the world is in chains," unquote. One cannot make the distinction between our racist government here and the apartheid government in Israel. An article written by Al Jazeera about this newly formed alliance states that, quote, "The Israeli propaganda machinery has successfully convinced itself and its Zionist supporters worldwide that any Palestinians who resist the colonization and theft of their homeland are terrorists, precisely on the same blueprint that today white supremacist racists in the U.S. are outraged against the movement for Black lives. The historic solidarity between these two movements is all but inevitable, and its leaders are not the corrupt U.S. politicians that AIPAC can buy and recruit to support one of the most vicious legacies of European colonialism, now sustained by the U.S. militarism in the heart of the Arab and Muslim world," unquote. The strong ties between the Black Lives Matter movement and Palestinians fighting for their rights cannot be broken, not until all sides are free from the injustices they have been facing for years. I hope this has helped you realize that violence and discrimination Black people face here is no different than the U.S.-sponsored violence against Palestinians. Social justice is deserved by everyone, and the current situation cannot be lived out any longer. I would like to end on a quote from Vic Mensa. Quote, "As with the Black community in the U.S., the use of incarceration, racial profiling, and targeting the youth as methods of control are heavily prevalent in the occupied West Bank. The main difference I see between our oppression in America and that of Palestinians is how overt and shameless the face of discrimination is in the occupied West Bank." On today's show, you heard the songs Egypt by Omar Effendim, Kufiya Arabiya by Shadia Mansour, and We Will Be Free by Vic Mensa. If you missed any part of this show, it's archived on our website at kboo.fm/one land many voices. Stay tuned for the next show, Valley View.
Sometimes I wake up and I look up in the sky, asking why I survived all the days that I could have died. Who am I in my place to contemplate suicide? In those times I try to remember that we could be free. Truly, if we only knew we were slaves to the pains of each other. One thing I believe I can learn, to see my enemy as my brother. Then we could be free, you and me, and love could wash away all the sorrows. I'm not afraid to bleed. If it makes a better today than tomorrow.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Eco Film Festival, taking place September 27th through 30th at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The Portland Eco Film Festival is the premier environmental film festival in the U.S. Pacific Northwest. This year, the festival will screen the films The Beaver Believers, Dirt Rich, The Kingdom, How Fungi Made the World, B-Sharp Honeybee, and Elephant Path. Again, that's the Portland Eco Film Festival, taking place September 27th through 30th at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Warning, the following message is only for listeners who contributed during KBOO's Fall Membership Drive. If you did not contribute to KBOO's Fall Membership Drive, please turn off your radio now.